do you suggest they buy it? Where's the best place to get it?
There are so many ways, but maybe a local bookstore, or you can order it directly from my publisher.
Good evening. It's 6 o'clock. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio. From drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between, professional, student, and community productions in and around Montreal, Chochage Munayang, where we spell theater with an R-E at the end. I'm your host, Sarah DeAy, recording from home on Thursday, February 3rd, 2022. On tonight's show, a special edition of Upstage, I'm going to play for you excerpts from Le Lab Fringe Buzz, a podcast put together by the folks at the Saint-Ambroise Montreal Fringe Festival this past year, and it was hosted by me. My guests will all be plucked from this series. They include Mike Payette.
We have a really unique arts ecology in Montreal. We have that. We have that in the companies that are represented. We have that in the festivals that are here in Montreal. And I think it can be easy to forget what beauty, what talent, what gifts, what opportunities are happening within this city on an ongoing basis.
Jess Solomon.
You don't know how to become a stand-up at first beyond, you know, the first thing you learn is to go to open mics. And then slowly as you meet people who are further along, you learn about the different opportunities and roads that people take.
Deanne Smith.
Yeah, yeah. It'll be years before a gatekeeper will like give you 45 minutes, right? So the way to like figure out who you are and start building your time is to put yourself in a fringe show and make it happen.
Tristan DiLala.
Macro, micro, macro. Like, be good. Be good, be good. If it's good, people like it. It's good. What makes it good? Okay, so unpack that.
Véronique Raymond.
We share the same streets. We share the same spaces. We say dépanneur, and my Anglophone friends say dep, which does not exist anywhere else than in Montreal. So, like, we are sharing the same space, and we are working in very small markets also. And we should be helping one another.
And Warona Setswaelo.
One of the first people, if not the first person I met in Montreal who was from here and had lived here not all her life, but most of it. The only thing they knew to recommend to me in terms of theater was the Fringe Festival.
But first, a reminder that theaters will have the green light to reopen as of this coming Monday. We can expect to see new shows as early as this coming week, although it's more likely you'll see shows showing up later in the month as theater operators get ready to open at half capacity. Centaur Theater, for one, has plans to put on shows for later in the month, but they've had to cancel some things that were set for January. So every theater is kind of going at their own pace. For now, though, I want to return to Le Lab Fringe Buzz. Back in spring 2021, I was asked to take part in a new project, a podcast titled Le Lab Fringe Buzz. It would be a bilingual audio series put on by the Montreal Fringe Festival, both as a way to mark the 30th anniversary of the fest, but also to connect a community during another pandemic fringe season. I hosted 4 episodes of the podcast in English, and artist Véronique Raymond hosted another 4 in French. The show is created with support from Arts Unite, and you can always check out the full episodes on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen with the title Le Lab Fringe Buzz. We begin tonight with Mike Payette. This multi-talented artist has taken on innumerable number of roles at the Montreal Fringe, from volunteer to artist and from running the box office to competing in the drag races. His love for the festival runs deep. When we spoke last year, he was preparing to leave Montreal to take on a new role as the artistic director of Toronto's prestigious Tarragon Theatre. We reflected on his experience with the Fringe and the community that makes it what it is. I asked him to describe his role in relation to the festival.
I'm Mike, a lover of the fringe, great appreciator of the fringe, wanting to be part of the fringe gang, like trying to like I'm the one who like can I get myself involved, like can I be your friend, fringe, like I'm that dude. Like I feel like I just want to, whenever the fringe happens, it's always like it's a moment where I feel like we're all like, you know, shedding something of the like the past season, and we get to come together and we get to see some art, and we get to just exchange drink, like we get to have drinks, we get to just be together. And
so why don't we talk about your beginnings with the festival, because you've worn many hats, you've done many things, so I'm curious to know about the first year you joined and in what capacity. And I imagine that desire to be part of this family was very strong, and probably what drew you to be there in the first place.
Yeah, my first fringe experience was, it was in the early 2000s, shortly after I think it had moved to where it's home now, you know. And I was doing a show called The Martian Chronicles. And it was an adaptation of Ray Bradbury's book, and it was with an acting studio called ASM Performing Arts that I was heavily involved with, and it was run by, like, you know, Dean Fleming and Chip Chipka and Lisa Kagan, who were like pretty, you know, awesome stalwarts within the theater community. Anyway, we were doing this show, and it was a pretty large cast, and I was 19, I think, at the time. So here I was, first of all, look at how many people are together. And then there are folks that I had recognized as well, like people who I would get to learn their stories of their relationship to the fringe, you know, or just like, again, some of the theater community folks who were using that as a hub also to hang out. So I was like this looking up and sort of wide-eyed that I got to be a part of it. And I remember just the invitation to be free and to talk about art and talk about creation in this open environment, and hopping from theater to theater while I was doing the show. It was like, it was a marathon, but it was like, it was one of the most, I don't know, awesome marathons to be a part of. I think, you know, I think about 2004, I think that was the year. And I wasn't even necessarily certain of my path. Like, table d'hôte hadn't been created yet. And I wasn't sure about what my trajectory was going to be in what capacity in theater. But here I saw this environment where it could be like anything. So like, started out as a performer, but then in like another year as a stage manager, and I'm totally not a stage manager, you know what I mean? Because they are worth their weight in gold.
What was the hardest job you had? Was it box office?
Jokingly, probably box office was the hardest, because the days were really long. There were no days. It was just like days and nights totally bled. And also you get to do like other things beyond your job. So that was like the drag race year. The hardest part of the fringe, I don't think was actually being directly related to the fringe, but more about supporting the fringe. And I'll explain, like, so whether it's being on a jury or a committee or like some sort of thing like that, you really want to honor everybody. You want to celebrate everybody's work, and to do that in an equitable and like and helpful way. Yeah.
Set the scene for me. Drag races. Were you recruited? Did you volunteer to do this? And what's the task in front of you when you sign up?
Yeah, no, I was totally forced, but I was voluntold to do it as the staff rep. Basically, the fringe. I was the staff member of the fringe of that year. So I did it, and I had done a show a couple of months before that called, oh snap, it's called Saving Celine, and I think it was in 2000. I don't know. Yeah, it was that same year, where I played a Whitney Houston impersonator, and it was at Mainline. And I think Jeremy and the rest of the Mainline gang were like, okay, no, we gotta see this again. So a day before, or a couple, no, probably probably a couple of days before, I was voluntold that I was going to do it, that I would be released from my box office duties for that period of time. The night before, lots of panic, of course. But that morning, it was we were taken to this this awesome place that I don't know if it exists anymore on Saint-Laurent, that is basically like a hub for some incredible drag queens within the city, costume shop. I went with like three other Montreal, whatever fringe reps who are also going to be part of the drag races. And we got to build our costumes. I created the persona of Chanel Prudhomme because my first dog was Chanel and my birth street was Prudhomme. So I was like, there you go. But I had this like beehive type thing. And anyway, and like really, it was awesome, awesome boots. So yeah, so we did that. And then we did our own makeup, which was a, you know, trial and error. And then, you know, Meadow and her gang come out and they're just beautiful, right? And you meet them and they're so like sweet. And then Meadow's hosting and we have the two sides of the fringe folks and the Meadow folks. And then it's a competition between the two of us. I think the thing that I remember most failing on was the creation of a cocktail. Like, I think I put like a cream vanilla thing with like a rum type, I don't know, a non-cream thing, and it curdled. And I think I put pineapple juice in it. Like, I remember that shockingly too well. Totally didn't win, but I remember there was a drag king that year from the fringe side who did win, and they were amazing.
You're going to be leaving Montreal soon, which is bittersweet, I think, for the community here, maybe for you as well, taking on the top role at Tarragon Theatre. As you prepare for that, are there any thoughts you'd like to leave or a message you'd like to leave for your community here in Montreal?
Oh, Sarah, I'm going to cry. We have a really unique arts ecology in Montreal. We have that in the companies that are represented. We have that in the festivals that are here in Montreal. And I think it can be easy to forget what beauty, what talent, what gifts, what opportunities are happening within this city on an ongoing basis. And so what I would offer is that let's keep remembering that we're not alone and that we have the ability to connect with other people, other companies, other whatever, to create really amazing things, to make really significant impact. And Montreal has historically been a kind of a siloed community, or English Montreal, a kind of siloed community. But even within that, and I think that is shifting as Montreal involves itself in the many discourses that are happening, you know, in this country, and since over the past year, it's something that we forget. It's something that we perhaps take for granted. And I would just offer that we continue to find the ways that we can connect, that we continue to find the ways that we can bridge ideas, bridge voices, to create possibility, to create opportunity, whatever that looks like, you know, for an individual or people. And go see theater. Like, that's the thing. Like, go support theater. Like, go support art. Go support culture, like, all the time. I'm not just speaking to, like, non-theater people and non-arts people. I'm speaking to our own community as well. Like, get out of yourself. Go see, go discover, go make an opinion on something that you've seen. Go, because you can't make an opinion if you haven't. You know what I mean? Go challenge yourself. Go try something. We still have the capability to do so, even in unprecedented times. And so look for those opportunities. And again, look in each other for those opportunities to challenge, et cetera, et cetera.
That was Mike Payette talking about the many hats he has worn at the Fringe Festival. You are listening to Upstage, the show about theater on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca. I'm Sarah De A. Still to come, the exhausting but very special job of being on a prize jury and how the Fringe helped a newcomer to Montreal land on her feet. My next conversation is a three-way with two comedians, Deanne Smith and Jess Solomon. These two began their careers in Montreal, working both in comedy clubs and putting on their own shows at the Fringe. We talked about what brought them to the festival and what comedy means to the Fringe and what the Fringe means to comedy.
I'm Deanne Smith. I'm a stand-up comedian. I started in Montreal. And yeah, that's pretty much me. That's everything I know about myself.
That's everything I know about Deanne as well. No other information. I am Jess Solomon, and I am also a stand-up comedian who started in Montreal, and that's where I met Deanne and Sarah, and I now live in New York.
I'd like to ask both of you, because a stand-up comedy show at Fringe is not the same as an interpretive dance, you know, Fringe, or a crazy DIY musical, or a one-man solo show, one-woman solo show. It's a different breed. Would you agree with that statement? And I guess number two, how did you guys approach your own Fringe shows when you were building them?
I would agree with that statement. And I've only done one proper show in the Fringe. I guest hosted 13th Hour a bunch. And so I'll talk about my show in a second. Jess has the juicier tales and the more interesting Fringe show experience. So I'd love Jess to tell it, and I'll just chime in and make smart remarks along the way.
I mean, I did participate more in the Montreal Fringe, properly speaking, than Deanne did. But I probably got the idea to do Fringe in Montreal because Dee was already going off and doing Fringe festivals in Australia, for sure, in multiple Australian cities by the time
this
we met.
This is cool. This is reminding me, maybe we went out before we were friends and you asked me all about this. Is that possible?
Probably. And I mean, I knew that was one of the things, one of the distinguishing things about you in the comedy scene in Montreal, which is a very small scene in English. And you don't know how to become a stand-up at first beyond, you know, the first thing you learn is to go to open mics. And then slowly as you meet people who are further along, you learn about the different opportunities and roads that people take. And you consider maybe doing some of those as well. I didn't have it in me to go to Australia.
You weren't following a girl there. I mean, that's the only reason I do anything.
I wasn't following a girl. But you know, I think the idea of doing a Fringe, because it's not sort of like a common thing, that people do in stand-up. They're sort of, I mean, in terms of the clear mainstream path, you know, you sort of work at a comedy club and you work your way up to doing more and more time, on the weekend, eventually to become a headliner, tour, and that kind of thing. So Deanne was already doing this kind of cool thing, building this, you know, these hours early on in comedy, building a fan base in Australia. And so when I realized there was a Fringe in Montreal, I was like, okay, well, that seems like a good idea.
Yeah. You're reminding me that I do have Fringe experience. I think we would both agree that when you're like a stand-up Fringe show, if it's going to be successful and interesting, I think should be more like a little more thematic than like a 45 minute set you do at a club. You know, a set at a club, a lot of times it's just like joke, 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 joke. You think about your opening joke, you think about your closing joke, but it's not necessarily following any kind of narrative or theme or taking you somewhere new by the end of it. I mean, it can, but it would be kind of rare to see that sort of thing in a comedy club. I'd say for a stand-up Fringe show, ideally, you'd have a little hook, you'd have a little bit of a narrative, a little bit something to make it more interesting and to kind of justify why it's not just, you know, the last set you hear at a club, why it's your name on the ticket and why people are coming to you for probably an hour or so, yeah?
Do you think that that's intimidating for some comics, that there has to be this extra refinement that goes into the show?
I think it could be, yeah.
Because we don't typically build our act in that way. But the thing about Fringe that can be cool is that it gives you an opportunity to do that much time on stage that you don't have for a long time in your career as a stand-up comedian, unless you're, you know, putting it on your own shows.
Years. Yeah, yeah, it'll be years before a gatekeeper will like give you 45 minutes, right? So the way to like figure out who you are and start building your time is to put yourself in a Fringe show and make it happen.
I was just about to ask about the overall feeling of the festival, like the fact that you're interacting with, sometimes tourists come to town as audience members, you might be reaching different audiences who wouldn't be at the Comedy Nest or Comedy Works. You're surrounded by volunteers, you're surrounded by you're talking about performers who've already been on the road for a full year with their shows. Like, was there any part of that atmosphere or culture that kind of was fun or instructive at all for you as for both of you as performers?
I love the Fringe atmosphere and the mix of people. When I did a show that incorporated stand-up, but was called, I did a show with Leland Beckman, who is a hilarious musician. And we did a show called Horrible Things that was like part music, part stand-up. We performed together. He did some music, I did some stand-up. It was like kind of this hybrid. And we got the audience member on the way in to write down on a piece of paper like the most horrible thing they've done. And then during the show, when Leland was on, I was reading through them and narrowing them down. And then we'd bring an audience member on at the end to tell us a story. And so we were really like in the mix with people in our show, thing that I really like. And I think there is like a quality to Fringe, even if it's like somebody that usually does go out to theater or does go out to comedy shows, there's really something special about everything being like all concentrated, you know, in a week or 2 weeks and all these venues close together where you can like pack in a few shows in a day. I love that whole thing, that whole vibe.
Yes, and it's a whole circuit and you get to meet people. I mean, people from out of town that go and do it internationally, but also in your own city to get to know people that are doing improv and sketch and actors and dancers. And it was fun to meet like this other crew of people and to enjoy their shows and hang out. And it's really worthwhile. I mean,
Would you get different responses from a Fringe crowd versus a comedy crowd if you were doing a joke about feminism or a joke about sexuality or something more edgy? Would there be different reactions or different vibes?
I would say that like I pretty much just do the same stuff everywhere, but I'll do it with a different attitude. So like in a Fringe crowd, you can kind of assume that people are a little more on board already with these kind of, it's not even progressive, but like with these type of ideas. So you kind of know you're speaking to like-minded people. And I just feel like with a comedy club audience, sometimes you have to just like hold their hand a little bit more through the material and just kind of like, don't make assumptions that you're all on the same page. That's how I kind of just approach it with a different energy, but it's the same material.
It also might be a little bit less different, but the two crowds might be a little less divergent. And like now I haven't, you know, my last Fringe show was in 2014, you know, so comedy club audiences then versus now. And like, you know, there's been a lot of progress and people's understanding of things. Like when, I mean, Deanne started a few years before me, but even when I started, the idea that you would bill your show as a feminist comedy show, I mean, it was hard to just say feminist on stage without like 18 other backup jokes to like address the, you know, the fact that you had. And you know, now in the last at least few years, it's been a selling point. Like you can fill a room because of that.
You just heard comedians Deanne Smith and Jess Solomon talking about the opportunity that comes with taking your shtick to the Fringe. I really enjoyed speaking with the both of them. Jess is now based in New York City with her comedian wife, Iman Al-Husseini, who's also from Montreal. And Deanne, of course, has also moved on from the city. So it was so lovely to hear their voices and to know they still have such positive thoughts and memories of the festival and the city. I'm Sarah DeA, and you're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, a special show tonight featuring excerpts from Le Lab Fringe Buzz, a podcast created last year by the folks at the Montreal Fringe Festival. I co-hosted the series, and tonight we are airing conversations from those episodes. Still to come, the Fringe is where the two solitudes meet. You might recognize Tristan DeLella from many award-winning theater shows and from his many appearances on TV and in film. Seriously, just look him up on IMDb. Over the years, he sat on many Frankie Award juries, which made him the perfect guest to take us behind the scenes of this process. It's not quite as glamorous as it sounds. Tristan, I think, has one of the all-time records for the number of shows seen in just a 10-day period. It's a pretty grueling process. Now, in our conversation, you might hear a seagull or two in the background, and that's because during this chat, I reached him in his car at the end of a very busy day as an actor. Here's my conversation with Tristan DeLella.
Hi, I'm Tristan DeLella. I'm an actor. I am alive and breathing today, and it's a beautiful day.
So this is really cool that we get to speak with you, because we're kind of asking you to take us behind the scenes a little bit about an interesting job. I think one of the most interesting jobs or tasks that you can have at the Fringe Festival, and that is to be a member of a jury. And I do want to also ask you about being an artist as well, because you've had that experience, obviously. Kind of being on the jury is kind of a shady, secretive thing, like being in a cabal or being a spy.
I mean, I think it definitely. Because when you're on a jury, you have access to see everything, right? And a lot of times juries are specific. And so you have to see a certain amount of shows that fit certain criteria. So it's a lot of socializing within the 2 weeks. It's a lot of up and down the main. It's a lot of, sandwiches and a lot of sitting on seats that aren't seats for shows. And your mind goes into this weird vortex of, appreciating a lot of art, but not judging it too fiercely, because you realize you're seeing 60 shows in 2 weeks, which is insane. And then very quickly, because you're on a jury, you start to decipher, okay, what do I like? What's not for me? What could have improved? And it's just a whole Tasmanian devil of shows in your head. But I take it with a lot of responsibility, because it is about, for me, appreciating a lot of people's art in a very short amount of time.
How do you fit 60 shows into 2 weeks?
The most shows I've seen in a Fringe was 63. I saw 63 shows one summer, which is insane, which meant I had no job and I had a bus pass and I had a lot of food in my bag every day. So I literally made a schedule with the whole calendar, and I'm like, okay, what can I see? What do I want to see? What do I have to see? What else can I see? And I fit in as much as possible. And I literally saw 63 shows, a lot of theater, of course, tons of dance shows, a lot of clown shows. I tried to see all the out-of-towner stuff, because you don't really get to cross-pollinate a lot being a Montreal artist. But yeah, I saw 63 shows, and it took a lot of planning.
Now, you said you've been on a couple of juries. So, are you in a position, depending on what kind of prize or jury you're sitting on, were you in a position where you absolutely had to see everything on the long list? Or do you triage based on what you're personally interested in?
Triage is a good word. You triage, yeah. Let's say you have to see every English language show. There's those type of juries. Or you have to see every show that's by a local company. There's those type of juries. And then once those lists are made, the first wave of jurors goes out, sees everything that they could. Conversations are had all throughout the process to kind of say, maybe we should be all seeing this, or let's free up our time with this one.
Like, some things get tossed aside and then others are a priority and you end up trying to go see that. So even after the first wave, you're still not done. You still have more work to do.
For sure. And sometimes someone might see something that they think is absolute crap, and you might love it. So it's very subjective. It's very, everybody has such different tastes, especially on the jury. There's fights, there's arguments, there's, long words and name calling of short words, but it's fun. It's fun because everything is so subjective. It's theater, it's art, it should be. And if you're not having a conversation, it's probably not good anyway. So
you ever come to blows over disagreeing over whether?
No. There was a food fight one time, but no blows.
What kind of food are you tossing?
I think it was like French toast or blueberries or something. Yeah.
So it's not just a popularity contest or like being voted most likely to, you know, succeed or whatnot in the yearbook. The prizes do matter. The Frankies are important. Why?
There's something about the spirit of Fringe that really allows people to not just create a play or create their art, but to cultivate it and to allow it to grow, find its feet, sprout, go places, travel. And I think with the specificity, the specifics of the different prizes really help people find their feet with their shows, be it rehearsal space, be it, you know, some money or posters or whatever it is. And just knowing that your community has your back is a big part of the prizes, right? So I think it's a really great vibe towards the end when the Frankies happen, because you see who really put their heart on their sleeve and put it into their work. And even if it's like, you know, $250 or something, it means the world to those that created that show. So yeah, I think a little definitely goes a long way.
And as an artist yourself, you can probably attest to, you know, putting nominee or a prize winner on grant proposals, or when you're headed off to the next Fringe show, I imagine that also helps you along, you know, in the next step of that show or in your career.
For sure. Like I always joke, nobody steal this idea because I might do it still, but I always joke, I'm going to create a Fringe show called, I won't even say the title I'm thinking, but I'm just going to put like those little laurel leaves on the side on everything, just because like, when you get nominated for something, that's what it's for. You put that on your poster, put it in your stuff, because whether it's nominated for my grandmother's favorite grandson or nominated for, you know, a huge Tony Award or whatever, it's somebody that's going to catch somebody's eye and mean something. So yeah, use all that shit and put it on everything, because that's what it's for. Absolutely.
Was there ever a specific situation, you don't have to name names, but was there ever a situation where you could tell that winning some rehearsal time or getting a nomination or winning a prize really made a difference for an artist, especially maybe a young artist who's just starting out?
For sure. So naming names, years back, I was part of a show by Joanne Sarazen called Jesus Jello, The Miraculous Confection. And that year, the show won a few Frankies, and one of them was really about a Montreal-based show, creating a show for a small space. And I think that really did invigorate her to just continue. It was such a hard summer and a hard process getting that script out of her head, I know, because it was very personal. And just getting that, I think, seeing my friend go through that like process of acknowledgement by the community kind of reinvigorated her to like just keep going that summer. And now she's, you know, writing all kinds of great Hollywood scripts for A-list actors in Hollywood and plays and stuff. So yeah, she's killing it.
Back to being on a jury, like what is the je ne sais quoi that, you know, makes a show stand out? Just taking notes for anybody who, you know, wants to win a prize someday.
Macro, micro, macro, like be good, be good, be good. If it's good, people like it, it's good. What makes it good? Okay, so unpack that. There's, you know, great scripts, great cast, even though it's a Fringe show and budgets are usually nothing or a cardboard box, you know, how artistic can you be with creating a world in a small space where everybody's sweaty, that we still get transported for half an hour to an hour into the world that we're watching. So, you know, get as creative with your sets if possible, as possible. Costumes are a thing. Yeah. Like there's a lot of like excuses that can be made because it's Fringe, because it's, you know, low budget and small space, but I've seen some fantastic shows over the years that have done a lot with nothing or very little. So there's no excuses, really, just the breadth of your own imagination. So in general, just be good and people like it.
You make it sound so easy, Tristan.
I know, it's terrible. I'm such an asshole.
It helps that you are also a good artist and performer. You're just like, you know, just know your craft. But
see, that is also subjective, and I know people that would throw French toast and blueberries at you for saying that, so but I'll take it.
Tristan, thank you so much for sharing your perspective and your experiences at Fringe. It's been awesome.
My pleasure.
That was actor Tristan De Lala on the strange, long, and mysterious job of a Festival Prize juror.
In the case of symptoms similar to those of COVID-19, such as fever, cough, sore throat, loss of taste, or smell, you should take a rapid home screening test. If you test positive, isolate yourself at home and please follow the self-isolation instructions. If you don't have a rapid home screening test, please self-isolate for the recommended period. Visit quebec.ca/self-isolating for complete instructions on how to protect yourself and others. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
I'm Sarah Day, and you're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, a special show that features excerpts from the Lab Fringe Buzz, a podcast created last year by the folks at the Fringe Festival in Montreal. I co-hosted the series, and tonight we are airing conversations from those episodes. My final interview tonight that I want to share with you is with the talented Véronique Raymond. She hosted the French episodes of the podcast we are excerpting from tonight. We had a conversation for this episode I hosted. To say that Véronique has had a lot of French experience is an understatement. She's a wonderful artist who has done 13 shows in 14 years at the festival. She's even started her own fest. It's called the Tutu Cool. You may remember hearing her on Upstage to talk about this short theater festival. Véro and I talked about her experience of bilingualism at the Fringe and what this means to her.
The very first Fringe I participated in was in 2006. I had heard about that crazy festival where you could just put your name in a hat and maybe have the chance to get drawn and put on a show. So I said, why not? And it was the start of a very long relationship.
What were your initial thoughts when you first were learning about all the things, the Fringe Buzz and the Fringe for All?
Well, it was exactly the type of events that I like, because it really creates a sense, it's really a sense of festival, as in you have one focal center point, the Fringe Park, and people go there, exchange, have a beer, there are shows, and then from there you go to remote locations, and we see that a lot in Europe, like a Festival d'Avignon, and I really like that type of buzz where you don't know what to expect. You just find out, you just experience it. You're late for a show, well, you go see another show. So I was really, really excited about it. And I really jumped into the model. I mean,
so I think, can you quantify how many shows you have worked on over the years?
Yes, I did a list before this interview because I knew there were many. There were 13 shows in 14 years in which I was involved, but some years were just crazy where I was in three different shows. Thank God, in one venue. They were so kind at the Fringe. They organized it so that I didn't have to run from one venue to another. But in some years, of course, my name did not come up. So there were some years where I was running around the venues as a spectator. But 13 shows in 14 years and all kinds of shows.
That's absolutely incredible. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I'm going to zero in on one show, La Dernière Enquête de l'Inspecteur Drive, a bilingual show.
Oh, yes. Yes, this is very funny. I went to Le Festival d'Avignon en France to see many, many shows. And I bought a book with this short play. So the title was La Dernière Enquête de l'Inspecteur Drive, with in parentheses, Toujours Ivre, always drunk. So basically your main character is always drunk. The whole story does not make sense, but there's a murder and he's got to solve the murder. And of course he's gonna solve it. One of my recent experience was in English. Guy Sprong from Infinite Theater gave me a part in a show. He needed someone with obviously a big French accent. And so I had the chance for the very first time to work with Anglophone actors from Montreal. And I was like, I want to do a show where we mix our life because we never get to work together. And the Fringe is the perfect place to do that. And since the plot of the play was so simple, we thought, who cares? If you don't understand French, you can come see the show because everything is going to be so big, you're going to get the story. And it's exactly what happened. And for the very first time, I had this chance to be the director of a show with bilingual actors. Even like the Anglophone actors would speak in French. In reality, they don't have big accents, but they would make them very big. I remember Carlo Mestroni, Stéphanie Breton, they would just like push it and push it. And so this was an amazing experience. And since that, I've been working always, every year almost, with bilingual actors on different projects.
So I guess I'm curious to know if the audiences were an even mix of different languages, or if you had people who were apprehensive, or they're only going to understand.
At first, there were very few people, only Francophones who knew us. But the fact that we were so close to the beer tent and the park, we were at the La Caserne Saint-Dominique. So we did the first one or two, and then the word started spreading, saying, you really don't need to understand French. Just come see it. It's stupid and it's fun. But that was great because after that, I did some shows that were pretty text intensive. And a lot of people from the Anglophone community kept coming because they knew I had, you know, some interest in having visual stories and that they could access at least a good part of the story.
So the benefit to doing Inspector Drive for Véronique Raymond is that you did manage to reach another audience and bring them in and kind of get on board with your vision.
Absolutely. There were many, many advantages to that show because I'm someone that is perceived as very serious often. And to do such a comedy and to reach such different people, that changed, I think, some perception for sure. And the rehearsals were amazing. And it was also a chance, you know, this show, I'm not sure we did rehearse there, but then for another show, we started rehearsing in venues where Anglophone artists were rehearsing. And it's also this opportunity to cross path and just, you know, stay in touch, exchange. And then I've started going to see a lot of English shows and I've discovered all kinds of people. So it was a very good experience and I've never regretted that. I'm also involved in a festival, and for the last 4 years, every year I program some shows where I ask Anglophone and Francophone to work together and they must perform the same short play in both French and English during the same show. So, because we have this incredible talent pool that is bilingual in Montreal, we produce shows that are very different and we should be feeding one another. We should be exchanging. I mean, this is amazing. It's an opportunity that you don't have anywhere else in Canada.
And with Festival Toutoucourt, setting this challenge of writing a play and performing it in two different languages, would you have had that vision if you hadn't come to the Montreal Fringe?
Oh, no, absolutely not. And no, for sure. And we've created it with the help of Stéphanie Breton. Stéphanie Breton is someone I met when I played in English, but with whom I've done like, I think, 6 or 7 of the 13 shows at the Fringe. And for sure, I would not have had the confidence to do that and to think it's even feasible without my experience at the Fringe.
So I understand that when you do, you know, like a dozen plays in X many years, they are obligated to turn you into a spokesperson for an edition.
Yeah, they had no choice. So I can have 3 tickets for one edition.
So you were porte-parole spokesperson for the festival in 2018, which is not that long ago. Oh. And you said something very interesting. We have very little places where Francophone artists and Anglophone artists meet. We live in parallel worlds, and there are no reasons for this to happen. Here at Fringe, Francophones and Anglophones meet.
And we share the same streets, we share the same spaces. We say dépanneur, and my Anglophone friends say dep, which does not exist anywhere else than in Montreal. So, like, we are sharing the same space and we are working in very small markets also. And we should be helping one another so that we can create shows that represent this unique culture that we share. And it's funny to see that we can live like in parallel worlds while we don't really live different lives. So we have the same references geographically, culturally, we share a lot of repères, and I don't know why we wouldn't do that. And a lot of us in the Francophone market will try to go and work in Toronto. And a lot of Anglophone people from here will go and do contracts in Toronto. So why wouldn't we be working together, developing projects?
That was Véronique Raymond, longtime Fringe artist and co-host of the French language episodes of The Lab Fringe Buzz. I'm Sarah Day, and you're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca. You can hear Véronique's episodes wherever you get your podcasts. She hosted 4 episodes, as did I. They interchange, so you'll hear Véronique and then myself. I've been sharing some of those conversations from the show on Upstage over the past few weeks. Before I go tonight, I'll leave you with a short story from Warona Setswayelo. She is a storyteller, mother, and activist who came to Montreal from Botswana 14 years ago. To her, and to many other newcomers to the city, spaces like the Montreal Fringe can act as meaningful entry points to the city and to its arts community.
I moved to Montreal from Southern Africa in 2007 in April, and I moved here on very much on a whim. I think I made up my mind, and I decided to move in February and then moved. And so I knew nothing. I knew nothing about Montreal. I knew nothing about Canada, to be honest with you. I knew even less about Montreal, didn't speak a lick of French, still working on that. And one of the first people, if not the first person I met in Montreal who was from here and had lived here not all her life, but most of it. The only thing they knew to recommend to me in terms of theater was the Fringe Festival. So I looked it up. I volunteered. Like, I arrived in April, volunteered that first Fringe Festival. It was fantastic. I was front of house, so I got to spend a lot of time there and talking to people. And I talked to everyone and found out so much about the theater community through there. Ended up volunteering for the next couple of years as well. I met Amy Blackmore. She was doing a show that year. She wasn't running the festival yet. But yeah, so it was the best welcome to Montreal for a theater person.
That was a short story from Warona Setswayelo on how the Fringe was her cultural and community entry into Montreal. And before the end of the hour, I want to squeeze in one more interview. I want you to meet Sarah Grenier-Laforce. As a theater publicist, she's usually the one behind the scenes, setting up interviews and coordinating messaging. She's in charge of public relations and partnerships at the Fringe Festival. She's also working on a graduate degree inspired by her many years at the Montreal Fringe. So I'm really looking forward to see what her graduate work or thesis produces. And she captained the creation of the festival podcast, The Lab Fringe Buzz. I spoke with her earlier in January to talk about the show and its future, as well as her research and the Fringe in 2022 this year. Is there going to be a normal Fringe? Here's my conversation with Sarah. It aired on our January the 20th episode.
Welcome, Sarah, to Upstage. Thank you for taking the time. So before we get into the podcast and how much fun this was to make, I want to hear about your relationship with Fringe Festival. What was your first year that you came to the magic of the Fringe?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. I'm super excited to be here. Fringe has been so important in my life for a very long time. I started working for the Fringe in a long time ago as an intern. And basically after that, I did so many different positions, and my actual position right now is, I'm the public relations and partnership director at the festival. But yeah, I've just been, a friend of the Fringe for a very long time. The Fringe is really important in my life, so important that I now study the Fringe. I'm doing a master on the Fringe Festival as well.
I wonder if we could parlay this eventually into a doctor of the Fringe, if there's some PhD material in there. But
I mean, there totally is. There hasn't been a lot of research, and you know, it's in the back of my mind. For now, I'm going to finish the master, but at some point, I'll do a doctorate as well.
It's so cool. So you're obviously someone who's super passionate about everything. Tell me how the podcast came together in 2021.
Yes. So basically, we were trying to find a way to connect with the fringe audience because, COVID makes it hard. But also, we were trying to find a way to celebrate the 30th anniversary of the Fringe Festival. And so the podcast just appeared like a great idea to do that, to connect with people who have been part of the history of the festival, but also to connect with a possible new fringe audience and to get all those folks together in a podcast to collect the history, to start archiving also because, you know, the fringe archives are not in good shape. We're working on it, but the podcast is part of it as well. So to collect oral histories. So all those reasons.
And theater is one of the most ephemeral of the arts. And so the experiences of Fringe, both the shows and what goes on between people, between shows, the experiences of this wild kind of, you know, you can do anything you want to do kind of festival, like that sort of stuff can evaporate. It lives in people's minds. And so in a way, as you're saying, this is like a form of archiving, of putting it down on paper, recording it, getting it saved somewhere. It's really important.
Yeah, especially for fringe shows, because often they're created by emerging companies, and those companies are very much looking forward, looking into the future. They're not looking into archiving what, you know, the one show that they've done. So yeah, totally, I agree.
I'm speaking with Sarah Grenier-Laforce, who is in charge of public relations and partnerships at the Montreal Centre-Mazes Fringe Festival, and we were talking about Le Labo Fringe Buzz, the Fringe Buzz Lab, a podcast that we are featuring on Upstage this week and next. So this all came together, and I want to know from the very outset, was it clear that this was always going to be a bilingual podcast? Because matched one for one, it's in French and in English.
Yes. Yeah, so, for us, it's very important to do things that are bilingual. The Fringe is one of the few places in Montreal that is actually a bilingual space. And so in my mind, the podcast always had to be bilingual. And a funny story is that so many of the people interviewed of the Fringe mentioned that without us prompting them, so we just had to do it. Like everybody agrees, the Fringe is such an important space for the connection Francophones and Anglophone meeting.
I want to know if there was anything that you learned over the course of the many, many hours of interviews, because you weren't doing the interviews, but you sat in on them. I think you were also kind of, you were behind the scenes processing some of this too. Is there something that you learned over the course of producing the podcast that really caught your imagination, or you learned something you didn't know before?
Oh, I was so touched by so many of the interviews. Yeah, like I've learned so many different things listening to all of the interviews, and so many times I got tears in my eyes because people really love the festival and it's a very important part of their identity. But one thing that I did learn that I thought was pretty funny, because it's been part of a debate for a long time, is where the Fringe actually started. Some folks are saying that it started at the McGill campus, and some folks were saying that it started on the Main, not far from where it is right now. And the founder of the festival are on the podcast, so they answered that question. I won't answer it because I want you to listen to the interviews, but yeah, learned so many things.
Sarah, I was so happy to be part of the first season of the podcast, along with the other host as well, Vernie Clément, who took care of the French side of things. And the really cool news is that there is going to be a season 2 this spring.
Yes, that's super exciting. Well, you know, since the beginning, since we started to talk about it, I've been projecting the idea that there was going to be a second season way before we would know that there was going to be a second season, just because there's so many things that we want to talk about that we haven't had the space to talk about. And so, it's super exciting. It's going to be released in the spring. We're going to have a bunch of new guests. I cannot wait. It's going to be great.
So if we want to catch up before season 2 arrives, where do we find the podcast?
perfect. So you can find the podcast on Apple Podcasts, and you can find the podcast on Spotify. And I would really recommend that you subscribe, because you're going to get the new season already uploaded to your phone without you having to think about it. And then you're going to be like, oh, wow, magic just got on to my phone. I just got to listen to this.
And is there anything you can tell us about the upcoming season so we can look forward to it? Or is that a top secret?
So we are still working on the process, but I can tell you that we're planning to go, you know, what can I tell? I don't want to give too many surprises, actually. So I think you're going to have to listen to it. But I can tell you that I was really excited the first season, and I'm just so excited this time, 100 times. It's just going to be great.
My last question for you is, last year was the 30th anniversary, but we were lucky enough to have some shows in person and then some online, kind of a hybrid style with loosening health restrictions. But now things are kind of on pause again with the fifth wave. Is the general feeling that everything is going to be okay for an in-person festival this coming June?
Well, you know, with COVID, we've been we can't plan too far ahead. What I can tell you is that the team is working really hard to make the festival as good as possible, as exciting as possible for the folks that are going to attend, if it's online, if it's in person. We don't know that yet, just because COVID is always making it hard. But what I can tell you is that the fest is going to be, it's going to feel like Fringe no matter what the solution is at the end.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Sarah Grenier-Lafosse, for taking the time to speak with me here.
Thank you so much for having me.
That was Sarah Grenier-Lafosse. She is in charge of public relations and partnerships at the Montreal Fringe Festival, and she directed the creation of Le Lab Fringe Buzz, the bilingual podcast we've been excerpting from this hour. You have been listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca. My guests tonight include Sarah Grenier-Lafosse, director Mike Payette, who once ran the box office at the Fringe, comedian Jeff Solomon, comedian Deanne Smith, actor and jury member Tristan Dalala, Véronique Raymond, co-host of the Lab Fringe Buzz and theater artist, as well as storyteller Warona Setswaelo. A big thank you to my guests. And since tonight we heard excerpts from Le Lab Fringe Buzz, I want to let you know who worked on it. The podcast was directed by Sarah G. Lafosse, coordinated and mixed by Corey Wolfson, creative direction by Sarah G. Lafosse and Amy Blackmore, music by Paul Carniello. And I adapted some of the writing from the original script to use tonight. This podcast is a project of the Saint-Ambroise Montreal Fringe Festival and their programming partner, Arts Unite. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to Le Lab Fringe Buzz on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, where you can find the full first season. And a new season is coming in the spring. You can always visit montrealfringe.ca for more information on the festival. You can hear past episodes of Upstage at ckut.ca under the archives. Theaters reopen at half capacity on Monday, and I'll tell you next week about what you can start planning to see. That's coming on the next episode of Upstage a week from tonight. Thank you to Jack Solar, our spoken word coordinator, for making sure this show gets to air. And thank you for tuning in. I'm your host, Sarah De A. Speak with you next time on Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and CKUT.ca. Have fun and stay safe. Up next is Grey Matters.
It's time to make an appointment for your booster dose against COVID-19. Visit quebec.ca/COVID-vaccine to follow the vaccination sequence plan for your area and book your appointment online. To continue protecting yourself against COVID-19 and its variants, get a booster dose and keep following distancing measures, wearing a mask, and washing your hands. The booster dose, the best way to stay protected longer. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
In the case of symptoms similar to those of COVID-19, such as fever, cough, sore throat, loss of taste, or smell, you should take a rapid home screening test. If you test positive, isolate yourself at home and please follow the self-isolation instructions. If you don't have a rapid home screening test, please self-isolate for the recommended period. Visit quebec.ca/self-isolating for complete instructions on how to protect yourself and others. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Good evening and welcome to the February 3rd edition of Grey Matters. Tonight on the show, we'll present a lecture by Angela Davis entitled What Will You Say in 2030? It was recorded in Boulder, Colorado on February 23rd, year 2000. Angela Davis is one of the iconic figures of this era. Acquitted on conspiracy charges in 1970 after one of the most famous trials in U.S. history, she went on to become an internationally renowned writer, scholar, and lecturer. She is Professor Emeritus at the University of California at Santa Cruz. She has been in the forefront of the movement focusing on the prison industrial complex and its intersection with race, class, and gender. She is the author of many books, including Women, Race, and Class, Blues Legacies and Black Feminism, Abolition Democracy, and Freedom is a Constant Struggle. So, without further ado, here's tonight's lecture, Angela Davis, and What Will You Say in 2030? Here it is.